You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans Women's World Cup Daily. I am excited today. I am joined again by another guest. Just as a reminder, Alexis is on vacation, but we've been upgrading on guest co-hosts, all right, this time around. And I'm excited about our next guest because she is an absolute baller. You've seen her, obviously, with the North Carolina Courage. I've seen her break Dominican hearts with the U.S. youth national team. But so I'm so excited to talk to her. Forward for the North Carolina Courage, please give it up for Brianna Pinto. Brianna, what's up?
Not much. Thank you for having me. I get to fill Alexis's shoes today. I'm actually, my middle name's Alexis, so shout out to him.
Look at this.
Great guy.
All right. You know what? In the little title card, when your name comes up, we're going to make sure we put your middle name in there, and we'll see if fans can tell the difference between the two of you. So, Brianna, thank you so much for joining me. We have to, obviously, the Women's World Cup is going on right now. Let's just get right to it, because today was wild. Two incredible matches, obviously Australia and France and England and Colombia, and just immediate reactions, because this is, how have you been taking in this World Cup with being an athlete and also these start times? You're on the East Coast. How are you managing to even watch the games and also get to training on time?
I think for me, I definitely have to watch a lot of reruns because we're in the middle of season. So sleep is of the utmost importance, but I'm loving this World Cup. I think the era of women's football is bigger than ever. And it's been so exciting to see so many teams with these storybook runs, specifically Colombia. Like, I love everything about how they play, and, you know, it's sad to see them lose today because I was actually rooting for them at this point in the tournament. But, you know, England is a great side, and they are like a favorite to win at this point. But also looking at the Australia-France game, I would never have predicted that outcome, but there's something to be said about having your fan support right in your backyard.
Right. It's wild that it's, you know, you get that it's definitely a boost having home field advantage, but it really is, and this has been kind of the narrative throughout the Women's World Cup, which is the not only are we watching great games, entertaining matches, but it's also the storylines of, like, teams fighting against their federations, fighting against the fact that maybe the sport is not the most popular in that particular country. And Australia has all kind of storylines, and they are succeeding. So so let's start there, because Australia beats France in penalties, and we can get to the penalties because they were literally the most chaotic. And it's upsetting, because it's like, these, for us in the United States, especially on the East Coast, penalties that this chaotic shouldn't be happening at 5 a.m. Don't do this to me. Yeah, it physically hurts. But
it's heartbreak.
But the fact that throughout this game, I honestly thought Australia was completely better. I thought they had better chances. If it wasn't for that goal line clearance from De Almeida, Australia probably just wins this game in regulation. But this game, and then just seeing how Australia has been playing overall, especially as a player, I'm a fan. I may not be able to break it down like a coach or a player can. But how have you think they've been able to do this, especially without Sam Kerr having started most of the tournament?
I think everybody else has stepped up in such a beautiful way. You can see that they let the ball work and they're looking for each other in combination, specifically in the attacking third. They're always trying to make the final pass. They're supporting with runs. And I think they have that bite in them and they're trying to be first to every ball, especially in the attacking box. Haley Rosso has had a great tournament. I think she's brought a lot of energy to their environment, but you can just see the energy and passion that is willing them forward. I'm super happy to see their performance throughout the World Cup.
Yeah, it's a it really is something that, like, you know, especially after Colombia losing to England, I'm just like, all right, that's it. I'm Aussie now. You know, every World Cup, right? Like, you know, I got into soccer. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn. You know, son of Dominican immigrants, soccer was not really something that we grew up with. But I had Colombian friends that introduced me to the game, brought me to my first soccer game. So that's it. I was just like, all right, during World Cups, I switch nationalities. I pick up a Colombian passport and start supporting my country from that my childhood country that I've been that I was clearly born in. But it has been especially when you say that they have bite. I think this is the a transformative World Cup for Australia and also probably for a lot of teams. They are not only offensively. I forgot her first name, but Fowler. You know, the people who step in for Sam Kerr. It's just like, I don't know where she plays. It's absolutely remarkable. The penalty that she took was a laser. No one's stopping that. The confidence is like, maybe it's simply just playing at home, or maybe there's something happened from the 2019 World Cup to now that every team is like, all right, well, the U.S. is not winning it all the time. Like, the federations have either they've stepped up, they put more money, mm-hmm. But there truly is it feels different than most than previous World Cups where, as far as the competitive level.
Yeah, I would say that everybody sees that it's there for grabs. Like, who wants it the most? And I think you have to come with a game plan where you have got a coaching staff that believes in its players, that has them organized in set pieces, that knows what their plan is. When one thing fails, they're able to bounce to a new formation and things like that. And I think Australia has shown that resilience. And back to your point about Mary Fowler, she's an 03. And one of the cool things about seeing some of the young players in this tournament is that they're playing with that freedom, that joy, that energy that helps them like thrive on that field. And you can see just a little bit of like cockiness that they're like, I'm going to take it right to the goal and I'm going to embarrass you on the way, way there. And I'd love that flair that she brings because it's so exciting to watch and it makes you want to be out there. So it's been so fun to follow the young players. I think Mary Fowler has stepped in beautifully and I'm sure Sam Kerr has been guiding her from the sidelines and giving her tips about how to step into a major tournament like this. I've played against Sam Kerr a couple of times, but she's a great leader. I think she knows what it takes to win and I think she's going to help guide this team forward.
All right. And as someone who's obviously represented the U.S. At the youth levels, I have to get your thoughts on how the U.S. Women's National Team fared at the World Cup. I mean, we've seen it's even from a, you know, I don't know if it's like a political perspective or just there's something we're not used to seeing the U.S. women lose. Right. So this is the first time in over a decade that we even sort of have to parse through these kind of feelings, but the U.S. women, obviously, you know, leaning on a lot of activism, leaning on just simply success. It sort of feels like everybody was waiting for 12 years for them to lose to get that like frustration out. But when it comes to on the field, well, what did you think? And then what do you think of the off field sort of response to being knocked out of the tournament?
You know, I think it's unfortunate because they played their best game in the last game and then were knocked out via penalties. But I think for them, it's just getting on the same page about what their identity is, because all these up and coming nations are able to hold the ball and play under pressure. And then I think we need to continue to evolve in our tactical approach, just because speed and athleticism doesn't win games as much as it would have could in the past. With that being said, I think we have talented players. I think we've got real footballers from 1 to 23 on the roster. And I think we need to be in a position where the players are set up to success, to be successful. So for me, I think in the opening matches, we kind of looked a little bit lost. We were a little bit flat-footed in terms of like our press. We weren't united. And then when we didn't have the ball against the Netherlands, it was just a little bit jarring, because the USA is used to being on top. So I think, you know, you take this moment, you learn from it, and then you come back in 27 or in the Olympics next year, and you kind of work on that identity, on like, how are we going to hold the ball? How are we going to make sure that we can suffocate the life out of them right, defensively, and just figure out like how we evolve. So I don't think that's anything to like hang our heads over. You know, having an expectation of getting to the World Cup final every single time is hard to live up to. But I think we should take it very seriously that we need to learn. We need to have better tactics put up for us to be successful.
Yeah, and as far as the drama around the Women's World Cup has been interesting, because the last couple days, obviously after the Netherlands lost, everybody seemed to be dunking on Bierenstein for calling out the U.S., saying that, like, oh, it was all talk and they were talking too much about getting to the final already, which is sort of an interesting thing too, because I don't necessarily remember any players directly saying like, yo, we're already thinking about the final. But the advertising campaign was like, hey, this is Sophie Smith, be terrified of her, US is coming for everything. And it was like the arrogance was there. So I don't know if it put unnecessary pressure on the players.
You know what, actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because I really did like the mindset, especially in the media after, you know, rather poor performances. Kelly O'Hara and Lindsay Horan were like, we're taking it one game at a time. We did what we had to do to advance, and we move on, and we continue to grow throughout this tournament. So I think their mindset, like when they didn't put the performance that they wanted, their ability to move on from that and focus on the game at hand and what it would take for them to advance was actually pretty admirable. But with regard to just the mindset and the arrogance that Lyneth thought that they had, I think you have to be confident to win anything. I think you need to believe in yourself, because if the players don't believe that they can do it, then there's no way it's going to happen. But you know, we have marketing dollars behind us. The whole U.S. wants to see our team win. And I thought those ads were incredible. It pumped me up. I think it got a lot of new soccer fans excited about this tournament. And you want to see our women put on that platform where they're international superstars. So I loved all those commercials. I thought it was a great way to support the game. And, you know, with respect to the U.S., they got to keep believing that they're going to win every single time. And it'll work out for them in the long run.
Yeah, it's a little bit of, you know, you got to ignore the haters, because there's a lot of haters. It's weird. It's like,
yeah, personally, if I were her and I lost in a World Cup final 4 years ago, I would not say anything about the U.S. I was like, you can't talk unless you've got the trophy. But right. You know, unfortunately, she had a moment of karma, because in the last game she had several quality chances at goal and was unable to put them away, and Spain steps up their young player and actually scores on the next play after that.
Parayuelo. Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah, there's a I heard somebody say on Attacking Third on CBS that we need more villains in women's soccer.
I like that word.
I think it's a healthy thing, because obviously it's part of a lot of storylines. It's in all of sports for the most part, and there is a this seems like a turning of the tide of just a like all right, let's have a personality, let's have character, and that isn't necessarily, you know, everybody ain't friends after the game. Right?
That's my favorite thing about, like, the U.S. Women's National Team. I think we've got so many villains, if you will. We've got so many fun personalities who are out there to win. Like, we've got real competitors, and I think that's why I fell in love with the Women's National Team, at least ours, for the U.S. But to see these emerging talents from all over the world come and show what they can do. Caicedo is one of them, Linda from Colombia. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Like, women are taking over. And
I agree. And it's not only they're taking over, but it's like, it's at this point, you know, the comments of, like, you know, I don't watch women's soccer, I don't watch women's sports. It's like, it's good business. There's plenty of people making deep, you know, really good money. It's only growing. You know, salaries are going up and stuff like that. So it's in the best interest of everybody to support. But some people want to take the time to throw shade or I forgot who it was. It was something like an England player. It might have been, I don't know if it was Chloe Kelly or somebody, but saying that, like, you know, I don't know. It's actually questioning, like, why do people spend time to knock women's soccer? Like, she goes, I don't watch darts, but I don't spend the time commenting about, I hate darts. Why are you watching darts? Because it's like, what the energy to put into that? Like, it's just, don't watch it if you don't want to watch it. So, you know, I tell these people all the time that they desperately need to chill. They need to chill with an ice cold Coors Light. Let's go, Brianna Pinto. Let's the segues are here. Because we're all watching Leagues Cup. Have you been watching Messi in Leagues Cup? I mean, I feel like it's appointment television.
Of course, I have.
Okay, yeah,
it is entertainment, pure joy. Specifically, their game versus FC Dallas. That was insane.
I mean, look, I love the fact that the storylines of, like, you know, the refs are in it for Messi, and it's like, yo, but why is this dude hitting the ball into his own goal? I don't know. He didn't need to do all that, but it adds to the storyline. So, yeah.
I'm only rooting for Messi now because my brother's team is out, but...
That's,
you know,
right. I was going to talk about that. Yeah, I mean, you come from a footballing family. It is quite impressive. So as always, this summer, stay passionate and stay refreshed with an ice cold Coors Light, official beer of Leagues Cup 2023. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligans. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, Brianna, thank you so much for partaking in that. The England... Colombia, and you mentioned Linda Caicedo a little bit. We've been talking about her a ton. It was sad to obviously see her in tears after the game was over. But what a player, what a tournament. What do you expect for her in the future?
I think she could become, like, World Player of the Year, honestly. I think... The thing that I really admired about her game was just her organization in the box. She always knew where she was, specifically her back post goal, where she took a touch with the outside of her left foot and then did, like, an inside-outside chop back to her right foot and curled it to the back post. Like, I think that was one of the top goals in the tournament for me, at least. I think she's just so savvy on the ball. And, you know, one thing that makes her a difference maker is how quickly she gets her shot off in this tiniest window of space. But, you know, she's a joy to watch. I think she's got the world in her hands, and it's just been so special to see her grow into this stage, because she's put the world on notice.
Yeah.
We see them.
Without a doubt. Yeah. I don't know if you've played against her. At any point, she's a bit younger.
I'm honestly not sure.
No.
Yeah,
but I
don't think so.
Yeah. The you know, we had, like, Melissa Ortiz on who's obviously with Fox and doing the coverage, and you know, just so many positive things to say and about her, about the team. Another kind of storyline, especially with Colombia, with fighting against their federation for just access to resources and just better pay and things of the sort. But Colombia has been, at least to me, just such a beautiful story with not only, you know, obviously having players like Linda Caicedo, but just the they're just like a they're really good team. I keep saying this all the time. They were incredibly balanced. I mean, even the what sucked about the you know they scored in, which was a remarkable goal in the first half, but the fact that they couldn't hold on and not give up a goal in that first half, I think, is what kind of did them in. Probably mentally, psychologically, it just hurts to give up that goal late in that in the first half after a just miscommunication and mistake, and the goalkeeper doesn't just hold on to that, and because it really felt like England was on the ropes, especially when that goal went in. Because if they would have just, you know, Mourinho'd it and just everybody just stay by 11 players behind the ball, I think Colombia could have done it. But the I know you had mentioned you have some friends that play for England. What's it like when you know how do you choose your allegiances? Because I'm sure you have friends on all so many different teams, so I'm sure it makes it a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I would say I'm a student of the game. I'm a fan of all the players that I've gotten to play against. I'm learning while I'm watching, so that's been super cool. But my teammates were Alessia Russo and Lata Wubenmoy at the University of North Carolina. So to see them step into the international stage has been beautiful. I'm so excited for them. Actually, Alessia scored, so happy for her. I think they're both incredibly talented players, and I like the fact that they're under Serena Wiegman. She's also a Carolina alum, so that's been pretty cool. But anyways, their team they play a good brand of football. I like how they hold the ball. I think they're patient under pressure, and I think they've got a lot of World Cup class football followers on the field. So it's been cool to see their growth in just the last couple of years, and specifically their investment in the younger players. So a player like Georgia Stanway, I grew up playing against in the youth national teams, and she's someone that has like almost 100 caps. I don't know the exact number, but they're building like a wealth of experience among their younger players who will one day take over that team. So that core group of like Alessia, Lauren Hemp, Latun Wubenmoy, Chloe Kelly, they all grew up playing together. So you can see that chemistry between them.
Yeah, Alessia Russo is also an interesting story there, because obviously Rachel Daly's on that team. And Rachel Daly is a very, very good striker who's playing fullback because Alessia Russo is just that good. And it's just a wild kind of formation and to have such a threat in the back as well, like Rachel Daly, is it makes it a little. I don't know if it's. Are you concerned defensively? I don't even know. I mean, England are that good that maybe it's like not that big a deal.
Honestly, I've seen Rachel Daly do it all in the NWSL. I think she's a really good player. I like the fact that she can play on both sides of the ball, like in any line. Honestly, and I think that's just a valuable tool, being versatile, because as the game evolves, you're seeing more outside backs get involved in the attack, and she's really, really fit. So she can take up the whole flank and find ways to interchange with the 7-11 that's right above her. So I think, you know, obviously she's a great goal scorer, but she's able to show her attacking ability through the outside back role.
Yeah, it's just like trippy to see a fullback wearing the 9. It's just like, doesn't look right on television, but she's obviously she's a baller. Yeah. What did you think of the Lauren James incident? Because that was a concern. A lot of people thought maybe this they wouldn't be able to get past Colombia because obviously missing one of their best players. But what was your reaction? Because also Michelle Alozie, she also, I don't know if you've seen her Twitter, she's been like handling it really, really well. It's like really, really funny. But what do you think when that happened?
Honestly, I was disappointed, just because for Lauren James to come out with the match that she did, where she had almost 3 goals and 3 assists, one was called back. There's no better way to step into the international level. And I think she could have put herself up for contention for like the young player of the tournament. And I was just disappointed because she put her team at risk. And I understand that she's young and there's kind of like the game management that you learn over time, but to step on someone, I feel like we should know that that's not okay. Michelle Alozie took it so well. She's a person of great character. She's a great footballer as well, but, I really commend her for, you know, just being noble in that situation. Obviously, it stinks to go out in the way that they did, but I was really proud of Nigeria's performance. I think they are playing a really great brand of football as well, and I think they looked really organized, and you could just feel that like competitive fire underneath them. And I really like what the coaching staff has done as well, because they instilled a belief in them that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, and I think you know, several of the players on the Nigerian squad are gonna, you know, heading to stardom, and she is definitely one of them. She did, and this was pretty funny. She was on like, I think, an Instagram live with like on a Nigerian show or podcast or something like that. And the host asked a very odd question, which even me, being a comedian, would never ask this question to an athlete. But she said, he said, "Who on the Nigerian men's team do you have a crush on?" Which was, I was like, "All right, whatever." Like, crazy, wild question.
Okay.
And then she said, "Alex Iwobi." And then the comments were relentless under it. Everybody was like, a bunch of Nigerian men were like, "I thought it was going to be me. What? How dare you? How dare you break all
I did
the
see that on my I did see that on my Twitter feed, but
that was amazing.
That's such a wild question, but you know, I guess hopefully their men's team is supporting their women's team. I'm sure they are watching back home.
Right. I want to wrap up with this. One of the things I really appreciate about you, and I find it fascinating, that you ran for you're on the Athletes Council of U.S. Soccer, right? You're still on there. So you are currently 23, correct?
Yes.
Right.
That's
and so this is awesome. We had Mikey Lopez. You guys ran together, right? Next Gen United, if I'm not mistaken. We had Mikey Lopez and
yep.
Smith Hunter, right? We had Smith.
Yes.
And
Matt Freese.
Matt Freese as well. We haven't spoken to Matt Freese, but Matt Freese, I should talk to him. He plays for NYCFC, and I'm like a couple minutes away from him. But the and this is an interesting thing. Obviously, we spoke about this years ago when the U.S. soccer president, Carlos Cordero, stepped down. There was obviously an election. And so this was my first time really getting into like the weeds of it and understanding it. And then you realize there's almost no young representation when it comes to how U.S. soccer is run and who votes and who makes decisions. So I just want to just ask you, like, what's the experience been like? Have you felt like you've been able to push any kind of real change, anything that you're really proud of with your work in trying to change how U.S. soccer is run in this country?
Yeah, I think it's been a really eye-opening experience, just because we get to make a lot of important decisions, like who our president is, who our vice president is, and things like that. Also, some like bylaws that we're trying to work on. So we've moved to 33.3% representation for athletes in the United States in national governing bodies. So what that means is we have to have 1/3 representation. And I was a part of the governance task force that kind of figured out how do we as the United States streamline that process of making soccer the preeminent sport in the United States. So it's not just about the elite athletes. It's about the adult athletes in Texas that need the refereeing to be successful in their games, but also making sure that we have enough funding for our national teams, our club level games, and figuring out a way to support every level of soccer in our nation. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds who have different ideas of how these organizations should be run. But the reason I wanted to be a part of it is because I wanted to bring a younger perspective. I wanted to bring a more diverse perspective because I truly believe that soccer is a global game. Everybody in the world plays it, and we should have that representation look like the people who are out there on the field. So I've learned a lot in terms of interacting with like membership organizations, understanding what the president does. And I just hope that we can use these next 3 to 5 years and really push for soccer to see its biggest growth in the United States, because I think we're walking into what could be the most transformative period of soccer in our history.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, look, it's a much longer conversation. You know, I want to get into like how do we get rid of pay to play and all this other stuff. But
those are conversations that we're having because, you know, the reason I actually joined is because soccer's changed my life. I've had so many experiences because my parents were able to afford it. And it's important to me to be able to extend those opportunities to other people and talk about the accessibility to the game. You know, in the governance task force and on the athletes council, we talk about how do we get people involved in power soccer on our deaf national team. Those are our extended national team programs. Do they even know about it? Because, for example, Nick Mayhew, who also ran on the Next Gen United campaign, he has CP. So he found out about the national team, the paranational team, on an Instagram ad. And that's not okay, because we want every kid in the country to know that there's a place for you in this game on the national team.
Yeah, yeah. I follow Nick Mayhew on TikTok, and he's talked a lot about that, and it's like very interesting. Also, my man posts the most thirst traps. The man is he's very handsome, but man on TikTok is a beast. Girls go crazy in the comments for him. So, you know, props to Nick as well, man.
Nick is a good-looking guy, but he's really stepped up after his track endeavors. He's killing it. I'm so proud of him. Good for him.
Well, all right, Brianna, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you taking the time. I also want to give props. Obviously, you play for the North Carolina Courage. You guys are in first place in NWSL. So, you know, obviously best of luck for the rest of the season. This has been I was in North Carolina when the Courage won the last time they won the NWSL championship. So obviously a great just soccer town. Obviously the team is very well supported. So do you want to let any people know about where to follow you or anything you may want to plug or anything?
Yeah, let's do it. So I'm Brianna Pinto. My Instagram is at b.pinto. My Twitter is at @B_Pinto9. And you can also follow my foundation, which is Pinto Football Foundation, football spelled FUTBOL. Those are my socials, and I'd love to see you guys there because I'll interact.
Awesome. Brianna Pinto, thank you so much for joining me. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Another Women's World Cup Daily for the Cooligans. And we'll be back. The next match day, I believe, is on the 15th, Tuesday, August 15th. So we'll be back with a new episode then. We appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you subscribe, everywhere on YouTube, the podcast. Shout out to everybody watching on DraftKings Network. We appreciate it. And we'll be back in a couple days. Continue to enjoy this wild Women's World Cup. Brianna Pinto, thank you again.
Thank you for having me. This is really special.
All right. Cheers, everybody.